Sarah Evans, and I am here today. I'm so excited about this conversation. This is my manager, Craig Dunn, and he has been managing me for how many years
12
now?
12 years this year.
12 years.
Yeah, can you believe it?
But we've known each other for 20 years.
Yeah, 22, I think.
Yeah.
23 at this point.
Yeah, unbelievable. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the music industry and what that all entails, but we're going to also talk about a big adventure that we shared together and how we are trauma bonded because
like adventure.
Of that.
That's such a, it makes it sound fun. There
it
were
makes
funny
it sound
moments.
Fun. Yeah. It was a negative adventure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and it, we've had so many adventures and so many places we've been to and things we've experienced and just crazy moments, amazing, like performance moments on TV and stuff. But tonight we're going to talk about one major, major event in our lives and that happened to us together that the fans don't know about. I talked a little bit about it in my book, which is called Born to Fly. It's a memoir that I wrote sitting right here. But first off, talk about how you came into my life and how we got to know each other. And now it's 23 years later, still working together.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because the story we're going to tell involves how I met you.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yes.
So, your ex-husband was an aspiring politician and my family is in politics in Idaho. He's from Oregon. So, my dad got asked to consult on his campaign. And I did the website for the campaign. I just said, I can do websites. Sure, I'll help out.
Yeah.
Which is then, I think we came over for a fundraising event or something in Salem. And that's when we met for the first time. And then, you know, I had expressed an interest. Like, I love music. I love country music. And you guys said, well, you should come on the road. Come to Nashville. We'll show you around. We'll, you know, see what you think. So I remember I flew to, I think it was California. It was Palm Springs, California. I flew out and you guys invited me on a West Coast run and I was just there to hang out and see what it was like, ride the band or the crew bus. And, you know, I'm like, this is really cool. I love this. And so I wanted more. So I came to Nashville, met with your manager at the time and they said, well, we love you, but unless you live here, you know, there's no opportunity. Like you've got to be present to win basically.
Yes.
And so I was early 20s. I'm like, I can't just leave with no job, but you know, or income. And so I was trying to figure it out. What do I want to do? And, I think one of the people from your management company called me one day and they said, hey, we want you to do Sarah's website for the Restless album. And it was, I think it was like 6 or 8 months before the album came out, but it was basically done. And so I said, I'll do it. Sign me up. And I'd never, like I could do websites and technology is like my second language, but I wasn't necessarily trained to do websites.
Right.
But I'm like, I'll do it.
Yeah, because it was a way in.
Yeah, whatever it takes, I'll do it. And so I locked myself in my room in Idaho for like, a month and a half, and I built the website from scratch, from the ground up, and I learned everything that I didn't know. So I did all the graphics and the coding and the content and everything. And I was like, this is so fun. And I loved it. So we launched the website, and then Kaylin, KK, your sister-in-law, was running the fan club. And it was all paper-based back then where people would write a check, mail it off, get like 4 quarterly newsletters mailed to them.
The old days.
Old days. They would get like a little membership card in the mail, you know? And it was just starting that websites were kind of like fan clubs were going on websites and digitizing.
Yes.
So I said, well, why don't we take that and digitize it? And I remember your manager like, we don't know anything about that. But sure. Figure it out. Do whatever you want. So Kaylin and I took over the fan club together and started running it, digitized it, and it just blew up and exploded. So then I came down to a show in Vegas and Brad Paisley was opening for you, the Las Vegas Hilton.
That is crazy.
Crazy. It was like a 3-night run too. It was like a 3-night run. I was like, well, it's easy flight from Boise. I'll fly down there. And the lady that was selling merch owned the company. And I said, well, what happened to the guy that was out on the road when I went out that last summer? And she said, well, you know, he wasn't working out. We had to fire him. We're actually looking for somebody to go on the road. Would you want to take this job? Would you have to move to Nashville? And so I'm like, well, how much does it pay?
Yeah.
So I'm getting paid.
How much did it pay?
Oh God, it was not much. It was probably like $150 a show to sell merch, which went up over time once I proved myself. But
yeah.
So I'm like, okay.
See, the artist doesn't know any of this.
Yeah.
I don't know anything that you're telling me right now. Because that was like, that's just not our world.
We probably never like talked about this.
Right.
Like of how all this fell into place.
Right. Like every little step that led you.
Yeah. And yeah. So I'm like, all right, I'll do it. Because if I make this much from the merch, mm-hmm. I'm making this much from the website kind of as a retainer and this much from the fan club, I think I can do this.
Right.
So I moved down and...
And what did your parents think about that?
They were great. They were super supportive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they knew that I loved music. Mm-hmm. I loved country music. I would get CDs and tapes as a kid and I would just read the liner notes. So I knew every... label that every artist was on, who produced them,
mm-hmm.
you know, songwriter names. And, you know, Nashville to Boise is such a big disconnect.
Exactly.
Just seems like a million miles away. But I just had this dream and love of it.
And where do you think that came from? Like, are either of your parents musical or did they also love music? Like, it's normal, like, for you to have been a music lover, but you were like obsessed, especially with country, and you know every country song. Like, there's really no song that can be played that you don't know the words to.
Oh boy, that's a lot of
pressure. And can sing along to. Yeah. I might name one.
My mom, like, always would play music in the house. And when I was a baby, she would put on the radio. It was like the public radio station, but they would play like symphony music.
Uh-huh.
She read somewhere that makes babies' brains, you know, develop faster or be smarter. So she would play that music. So I think just music in general was always
yes.
like there. And then my dad is from a cattle ranch in Eastern Oregon. I mean, they're legit ranchers. You
right.
know, that's what they do. So they listen to country music. So that's what he listened to. So I think that's what my mom kind of started listening to. So that was just kind of my soundtrack.
Right.
Growing up.
And you just loved it.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I remember going to this rodeo and we didn't have any money when I was growing up. And I'm pretty sure it was either Dolly or Barbara Mandrell. They were playing this rodeo and mm-hmm. we like went outside. My dad took me and we like looked through the fence and watch. I think it was Dolly. I'm almost positive it was Dolly.
Oh my gosh.
And we didn't have money to buy a ticket, but I just like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
You know? And there's just something that always resonated with me about country music, with the lyrics and how mm-hmm. raw and authentic everything was, especially in like the 80s and the 90s.
Yes.
And, you know, it was just great, great music. But that's when, you know, I was kind of coming up and
country music was
it.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And it was so, it was much more like you said, from Boise to Nashville, it was just like impossible to even consider. Like it's sort of how we think about LA in the day. Cause even mm-hmm. LA has Hollywood and the movie industry is basically dying
mm-hmm.
and nobody makes great movies anymore. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we used to go to the theater and you know, Jay and I have been on a kick recently of just watching old movies, like, old, I say, from 10 years ago
yeah.
and back. And it's crazy because there used to be, but it was so untouchable. So for you, country music, for all of us, I mean, me too, growing up in Missouri, it was like,
yeah.
I would do the same thing, like get the album, read, and especially like Reba McEntire, I would just stare at the picture and wonder what she was thinking and where did she get that shirt and why did she choose that? All of it. It was so much more glamorous.
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. And there was more of a mystery to it, too.
Yes.
It was before social media. And mm-hmm. so people were kind of these bigger than life
yeah.
celebrities. But Reba, we share that like fascination and love of Reba. I was obsessed with Reba.
Yes.
So much. I knew every song, every lyric. I went to every tour. And I remember one time she came to Boise. And did you go to any of those when she was like, you know, it was like all the buses and the trucks and she'd come out in like a airplane on the stage. Did you?
No. See?
She had backup dancer. I mean, it was like a Taylor Swift production for the time. It was.
To be honest, I've actually never seen Reba in concert other than opening for her on the Girls Night Out tour. And then maybe one other time Joe Galani invited me to see her with Brooks and Dunn on that tour. But I don't know that I ever saw her because we were poor
yeah.
too. I didn't know you were poor growing up.
Yeah.
I didn't know you had no money.
Probably like junior high, high school, we mm-hmm. got money, but like we were Goodwill, Salvation Army, clothes.
I did not know that.
Yeah. My mom would make like potted meat sandwiches in the oven,
uh-huh.
you know, because it was cheap and
yeah.
it was just white bread and that. And
did you have salmon cakes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep,
we had salmon
totally.
Cakes all the time.
Yeah. A lot of casseroles.
No, but it was so. There was so much mystery And I think that's the sad thing. Like, there's so much good about social media, but that's, mm-hmm. that is one of the sad things. I mean, there's give and take with all of it. But yeah, you just, there was no way that you would ever see Reba McEntire in her own element or talk about it. Like, when, remember when she put out her memoir?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was like in 1990 or something. Yep. And I just remember freaking out and reading details about her that I otherwise would have never known.
Yeah. And about like the plane crash.
Yes.
That her band died in and like all of that stuff. It was just like, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. That song that came, if that I had album. Only known.
Oh yeah. That whole album for My Broken Heart.
Yes.
She picked that whole album of songs because of what she was
doing.
If
the fans don't know what we're talking about, Reba McEntire, she was leaving a concert. And there were two private planes, mm-hmm. right? And she was in one with like her KK. She had a KK.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name, but she did hair, makeup, wardrobe, everything for
Sandy
Reba.
Sandy Spica.
Yes, Sandy Spica. Yeah. The other airplane with like half the band and crew or whatever crashed.
Yeah. It flew into a mountain.
Everyone on board died, right?
Yeah. Her whole band and crew,
died.
She stayed with Sandy and her husband. Stayed back for... She had like some appearance or something else, but
yeah, it was horrific.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. Yeah. So anyway, Reba and I also have that in common.
Yes. That'll be
crash.
Another episode.
Yeah. I got to get her on the podcast. Oh, so,
yep. We'll make it happen.
We have to make that happen.
So jumping back. So I'm doing all this and I'm still living in Idaho before, but I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when Born to Fly came out, still there in Idaho, that song, I was just was like, oh my gosh, it was like record scratch moment because it was so cool and unique,
yeah,
and
different.
The bluegrass sound, but pop and country all like magically came together.
Yeah.
And I just literally stopped. And when the music video, the first time I saw it, it was like this weird God thing where you hear, I'm sure this has happened to you. It's almost like a little flash or like a message pops in your head.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, you're going to work with her.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if I've ever told you that.
You've never told me that.
Weirdest thing. And I'm like, I hadn't met you yet. Hadn't met your ex-husband.
Yeah.
No connection, nothing. And I'm just like, that's weird. And then it all just kind of like fell and happened.
You know,
there was a lot of hard work involved,
right.
But it all just kind of like the doors kept opening.
That is crazy.
It's so weird.
And I wonder if you hearing that from God, you're going to work with her one day. You know, how like led you to make decisions
mm-hmm.
leading towards me.
Yeah.
But it's so weird that we met because of politics and not music.
Mm-mm.
That is crazy.
And then Born to Fly, though, the message of that song, it was like I was in that phase of wanting to leave my hometown, wanting to mm-hmm. follow my dreams. And so it just kind of resonated with me.
Yep.
So much, too. And it was a just badass song, too, you know, musically.
Yeah, it was so... It was like, what are we listening to? Is mm-hmm. this bluegrass or is it country or is it? Yeah. Wow. I did not know that. That's incredible. Okay. So you're still in Boise.
Yeah. So then I'm jumping around. But so then I moved to Nashville, went on the road, selling merch, doing the website, running the fan club. And I loved it. You know, it mm-hmm. was so much fun. You know, your band and crew. You know, and because of you, you made it like a family environment out there. So mm-hmm. it was fun. Everyone's young. We're, you know, touring the world and the country. I think I've seen 49 of the 50 states because of being on the road with you. Alaska is the only one I haven't done yet.
Yeah.
But it was amazing and I loved it. And mm-hmm. I think it was about 6.5, 7 years on the road. And, you know, I loved it, but I didn't want to be a roadie. And that's kind of what merch is a little bit, you know.
Yes.
No disrespect, because I, you know, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, selling merch on the road isn't a career that you would...
You're not going to do that the rest of your life.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I wanted to do more in the music business, and kind of management was my ultimate goal
mm-hmm.
because it touches everything.
Right.
You know, like publishing has its niche, record label has its moment. You know, everything has like a section, but management literally...
Oversees it all.
Everything.
Yes.
So I'm like, I'm not going to be able to get to that point if I stay on the road. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever done because I loved it and I loved you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh gosh, you know, how's this going to work? And so I remember telling you, and I remember you were being upset about it.
Yeah.
That I was going to come off the road. And
yeah.
I actually partnered with a company that did websites and fan clubs. And Hillary Scott of Lady A's dad owned that company. And so you came with me as a client, and I was also doing Josh Turner's website and fan club.
Yes.
You had the same manager at the time. And so he came with me too. And so I got Lady A. They had just done a free website for them. They didn't have a record deal. They had just met, you know, they had nothing going on. And so they said, oh, you're friends with them. You can be the account manager. I'm like, sure. So I was there from day one. I started their Facebook page, you know, and of course everything blew up with them, but I was able to use all my connections from being on the road with you to sign all these acts because I had met all these different managers or tour managers or whoever. So
right.
Signed Brad Paisley, Little Big Town, Eric Church, you know, it just went Alison Krauss. It went on and on and on. And we blew that company up.
Right.
And it was the biggest in town. We had a merch division, pre-sale ticketing, you know, and I ran it for about 5 years.
That's amazing.
I loved it. And yeah. I was able to like learn a lot more about what other managers do and how other labels, you know, approach things. So I kind of tried to take the best of all that. And then knowing that management was my ultimate goal.
Right.
And then, you know, we decided to work together and, and here we are 12 years later.
So at the time of the story, well, it's almost like I think about, people who sell merch on the road, and it's kind of like working in the mailroom at William Morris or CAA. Like totally. Everybody starts in the mailroom, but their goal is to be an agent or a manager or, you know, run a movie studio or a label. And so it's cool that you kind of did that whole like step by step.
You playing in bars.
Yes.
You know, singing demos, you busted your ass and you kind of went up the layers to get there. And you wouldn't be as good of an artist today if you didn't know all of that.
Absolutely.
You know? You learned how to lead a band, how to do all these things that a lot of artists, that if they just skip that, they don't have those skills.
Totally. I mean, because it's hard enough to do it without the experience and I had a lifetime of experience already before I got signed. So I was on Dancing with the Stars. And you were not managing me yet at this time. So what was your position at the time that I was on Dancing? Still with the company?
No, I was working for you still. I was on the road selling merch.
Oh, you were still on the road at that time?
Still on the road, running the website and fan club. But the great thing of doing all that together was I was on the road, so I'd take a camera everywhere we went. So I was filming you guys behind the scenes, getting behind the scenes photos for the fan club, for the website, for socials. So like, I think we created webisodes before it became like a thing, you know, and I was able to talk to the fans and know them. So when you did Dancing with the Stars, I can't remember how many months it was going to be, 6 months, maybe total. If
something
you had
like
stayed
that,
on.
Yeah.
And so you weren't touring. So I talked to your manager and I said, hey, can I come out to LA and do all the behind the scenes stuff for that since we're not touring? And she said, sure, but you have to drive yourself out there. So I drive cross country.
These are all the things that the artists don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I knew you didn't know that, but so I drive my Ford Escape cross country and I'm out there and I bring, back then it was like the big TV camera. You remember that thing I used to haul around?
Yes.
So, and then the cameras were huge. So I'd have both of those on my neck all the time. And I'm like, I'm just going to come out, do all this. And we created a website, if you remember, called dancingwithsarah.com.
Yes.
And so that was like the focal point where we sent everybody to, and country radio really jumped on board, all the media, because you were the first country artist to do it. I think it was the second season or third season.
It was, I think season two or three. And country radio was so supportive and excited because it brought attention to our genre.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I was there to put all these behind the scenes things on that website, you know, to get people to vote for you. So that's what kind of brought me out there.
That is insane. And so if you don't, people who don't know, my marriage was dissolving. I guess it started about 6 months before Dancing with the Stars. And I knew that I needed to get out of the marriage, but I didn't believe in divorce. I didn't want to divorce. We had three children. I had just had Audrey. So she was a baby and I felt like, you know, do whatever you can to try to save the marriage because that's the right thing to do. Even though I didn't want to, I was sort of willing to sacrifice my happiness for what I thought was the right and noble thing to do. And so I remember getting the ask to do Dancing. Well, first I was playing CMA Fest and I was on the big stage, and one of the producers of Dancing with the Stars, it could have been Dina Katz.
Probably was, yeah.
Was on my bus when I finished my show, my set. And so I said, oh my God, I love Dancing with the Stars. And she was like, you do? And I said, yes, I want to be on it. And then I think I got pregnant or something. So we had to wait like a while. But I got the ask to be on. See, these things are so hard for me to remember, because when you're actually the one doing it, you're not watching it.
Yeah.
So you've watched my career.
Well, and that time too, you were like at the pinnacle of everything going on. You know, Suds in the Bucket had come out and
yes.
was huge. Like you were on every TV show. I mean, you were like,
yeah, I was a huge star.
Going crazy too.
Yeah.
I mean, you were so busy. You didn't have time to probably process it and think about it.
And I remember that year, the year that Audrey was born, well, she was born in late 04, and in 05 is when I had my meltdown, mm-hmm. which is going to be another episode. We should talk about that Friday night.
Yeah.
But I made A Real Fine Place to Start, had a baby, made A Real Fine Place to Start, you know, wrote it, recorded it, produced it, released it, did all the stuff that goes along with releasing that. And I was on tour with Brad Paisley. And I also made a Christmas record, like a half Christmas record or something. Just all the stuff. And I think we realized that I had done over like 310 appearances mm-hmm. that year. And in December, I had a meltdown. Like I lost my mind. Then in the spring, I got a trainer to help me get into shape for Dancing with the Stars. And her name was Kat. And she came over the first day and she was like, let's just walk around your neighborhood and talk about your goals and what you want to do. And as soon as we went on the walk, after she came in, she said, there's something wrong with your husband. What's wrong with your husband? And I was like, oh, you know, we're having some problems or whatever. And I decided to spend the summer doing my training for Dancing with the Stars in Oregon mm-hmm. because that is where my ex-husband is from. That's where he wanted to be. He always wanted to spend the summers out there, even though that it was so hard on me because I was having to tour. And so to come off the road and go to Oregon from Nashville was just ridiculous. I mean, it was just worst time of my life. It was terrible. But I decided to rehearse. And so we show up at this little dance studio in Salem, Oregon. And I realized that my partner was Tony D'Avalani. And he said the same thing. Like the second day we worked together, he goes, what's going on with you and your husband? And I was like, oh my God, is it that obvious? And it was.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that it was that obvious. But anyway, as I was appearing on Dancing with the Stars, the marriage was breaking down. We tried marriage counseling a lot, and it's like everything I would do forward motion in my career, he was pulling me back, trying mm-hmm. to pull me back to not do it or to not make it easy.
You'd always get to like this point where everything's working, firing on all cylinders, and you're about to jump to that next level, you know,
yes.
and he'd do something to pull you down. We
right.
all watch it and we're like,
absolutely.
What is going on? And why is she letting him do this? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, now I realize that it goes back to other episodes and things that I've talked about in my upbringing and just not believing that I had the right to speak up for myself mm-hmm. or say what I wanted, because I was raised to do what I was told, not what I wanted.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's only in the past just few years that I've started saying, this is what I want. Mm-hmm. And I'm still terrified to do it, to say it to anybody. Because I don't want to make anybody mad at me ever. And, but I also get very mad when people get mad at me. Because I'm like, I know how hard I'm trying to be nice and not ruffle feathers. Anyway, so I agreed to do all of my training in Oregon. And it was like, was it the whole month of August, I think?
I think so.
And then September we were going to start.
Yeah.
And so in September we moved to Beverly Hills because I said the only way that I would be on the show is if I could bring all three kids and a nanny. And our marriage counselors advised him to stay in Oregon and let me do Dancing with the Stars and leave me alone. And then after Dancing with the Stars, we'll reconvene mm-hmm. with the counseling and all that. Of course, he refused to do that. He wanted to be at every episode and come down there and be seen on TV, on camera. And also at the same time, he was trying to make a case against me to show that I was working and not being a good mom. And
which was so crazy because all of us around, you were the most attentive, sweet mom, and those kids adored you, and you were mm-hmm. always there. You would sacrifice the work for the sake of the kids. You know, like you probably would have been a better dancer mm-hmm. if you had rehearsed more, but you're like, no, like I'm going to do just enough to do as good as I need to do, but the kids are the priority.
Right. After about 8 hours of rehearsing and not being with the kids, and also what people don't realize is when I was on Dancing with the Stars, I had to fulfill shows that were booked. Mm-hmm. So there were times where we would shoot Dancing with the Stars, the Wednesday show and the Thursday show. And then I would get on a plane with the kids and go somewhere to do a show. I mean, I was killing myself. Mm-hmm. It was so exhausting. And but I've always sacrificed myself for my children, mm-hmm. you know, like I will get no sleep, no rest, and Dancing with the Stars was also requesting that I do tons of press for them.
Yeah.
So I remember, you know, getting up at 3 a.m. and doing hair and makeup to be on all these morning shows, to promote my involvement with Dancing with the Stars. So it was one of the hardest times of my life was when I was on. And I would be in the hair and makeup trailer. I would have my makeup almost done and I would start thinking about everything and just crying. And it was kind of like the scene on Steel Magnolias where Shelby has a diabetic like seizure mm-hmm. and she's sitting in Trevi's chair getting her hair done for the wedding. And she has this, you know, low blood sugar drop or whatever, and she messes her hair up and she cries. And Trevi, I could cry saying this, it's emotional, but Trevi, who's played by Dolly Parton, she said, it's all, you know, it's okay, we'll fix it. And the makeup ladies just would keep saying that to me, like, it's, we'll fix it, don't worry about it, if you have to cry, cry. And so I would be on Dancing with the Stars and you could see some of the episodes, my eyes were just blood red, swollen, because I'd been crying the whole day, missing my kids. Audrey wasn't even two yet. And I didn't want to be away from her, especially for 10 minutes, much less mm-hmm. 10 hours in a day. So I'm really glad I did Dancing with the Stars and it helped my fame grow and all of that. But it was really, really, really horrific time in my life.
When all of us around, well, not everybody around you, like a lot of the band and stuff maybe didn't know what was going on, but like your inner circle, like the nanny and me,
yeah,
you know, we knew everything that was going on and how yes. bad it was and how upset you were. And I remember like coming over to your house in Beverly Hills every Sunday night
Yes.
And because your ex would fly back to Oregon because he didn't, he just wanted to be there for
the wanted to be on the shows. Yeah.
And you and I would watch Desperate Housewives and Brothers and Sisters and drink wine.
Yes.
And just like chill out and hang out. And you'd already put the kids to bed, you know, and we'd just talk. And
it was amazing. Like, yeah. And thank you for doing that, by the way.
What?
Because
no, it was fun. What?
It was so fun, but it also kept me sane. Like, I need a friend here who, like you said, who's in the inner circle, who knows what's going on. Because, you know, where was the nanny? Where was the nanny so when you would come over?
They got her an apartment. And so she would go stay in the apartment, I think.
Katie had an apartment.
Yeah.
Right, because Craig, my ex, wouldn't let her live at the house. Yeah, that's right.
That I had to like stay with a friend in the valley the whole time. I didn't have an apartment. I
oh my gosh.
I know. So
I did not realize that Katie had an apartment.
Yeah. It was right by the Grove. Those apartments right across the street.
I really do not have a lot of memory about that time. I'll be honest with you. I think I've blocked out so much of Dancing with the Stars.
It's traumatic.
It was traumatic. And also learning those dances. So it was like, it was so hard. And I remember different people from Nashville, like friends, just to see an episode. And, you know, I was doing really well.
Yeah.
Thanks to you promoting me and getting the fans to vote for me. I was doing well.
You were doing really well.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think we can say at this point, but we found out after you left the show that, because I had a spy, that a friend of mine worked for the production company, but you were getting more fan votes by like double than the next person.
Wow.
The most. And so it was half judge voted, half fan voted. And so based on that, you know, you would have made it to the finale.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. Yes. So the night of the Paso Robles, that's what I remember, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called? Things were so bad because I had reached my limit, and so I had called divorce attorneys in Nashville and just said, you know, I have to get a divorce. The behavior was so bad, and I just realized I don't want to raise these children with him, with this. And I'm not going to say why, but there were very good reasons why. And so we did that episode. That was really, like, if you go back and look, it's where I'm in the black and white. The top of my dress was black and white, and the bottom, I think, was red or black. And my eyes were so swollen. Like, it was unbelievable how much I'd been crying and still doing all that we were doing. After the judging night, right?
Because it'd be an episode that was the dancing competition, and then the next night was the results, basically.
Yes.
They stretched it out.
They stretched it out. And we had to do, and everybody had their own trailers. And I remember going into my trailer, and my brother Jay had come there to be with me and help me with the process of separating. On the Thursday night, the results night, you would have to get back in your costume, do all the hair and makeup the exact same as though it were, I don't know. Anyway, just so much, so much, so much. And we did the results show. I made it through to the next round. And then after every results show, we would go across the street to the Grove and we would have dinner at one of those restaurants in the Grove. And things were getting, well, what would you call it? Almost scary at that point.
It was like there was so much tension in the air, you could feel it.
Yes.
It was so uncomfortable. And for those of us that knew, we were like, oh boy. It was like a bubbling pot, like a pressure cooker that was about to explode. You could just feel it.
And it was like the next day, I think he was going to be served with the divorce papers. And so I was just trying to get through that night.
And there was a whole like intricate plan of you and the kids were going to be out of the house shopping. He would be served. you know, it was all very well orchestrated.
Right.
You know, and we would have security with you. Like, it was just, okay, we've got this plan. It's going to be okay.
Yes.
So that's what we were thinking was going to happen.
And we were at the restaurant, all three kids, my brother Jay, you, my tour manager at the time. And then I think we had a couple of security guards.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Yeah.
So I had a feeling, a mother knows. And so I just had a feeling that he was going to try to do something involving the kids, because the kids were always used to scare me. And that continued on the whole time they were going. Every time they would go to see him, he wouldn't return them on time. You know, I mean, it was just always, you know, they were just a window to get to me.
Yeah.
And to hurt me, you know, so he would use them and do things and just mess with me because he knew they were all I cared about. So this night I knew that, like you said, the pot was about to boil over. And so I didn't want my kids to be away from me. And something happened at the restaurant. I felt that one of my children were in danger. And so I knew that Tony, my dance partner, was next door at another restaurant.
And he knew, of course, everything that was going on.
Everything.
And he knew that you were filing the next day. So he was kind of on guard almost. Like, he,
he was like, if you need anything, call me. I'm just going to go eat with my family at this, the restaurant next door. So I called him and I said, shit's going down. He saw two off-duty police officers sitting at the restaurant. He grabbed them basically by the collar and he was like, come with me, we need police. And so the police came, and I had two friends from Nashville that were visiting, Cindy and Leslie. And
Cindy knew, Leslie didn't.
Yeah, Leslie was like, totally what is going on?
Yeah, what did I walk into?
Yeah, because I was trying not to tell people.
Yeah.
You know, so trying to get into the story without disparaging him is a little difficult. But anyway, we were all leaving the restaurant. We were basically following my ex out of the restaurant with one of my children. And Tony put his hand up to tell him to stop. And so he stopped, and the police then got involved and said, you know, what's going on? And we had to explain everything. And you can kind of take it from here, because I went, I think, into...
You're probably in like a shock.
I went into shock.
Yeah.
I literally went into shock because I was so afraid.
Yeah.
About my child.
Well, and this is everything that you had kind of feared for years happening.
Happening.
In real time.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know, it's like your worst nightmare is coming true, basically.
Yes.
So at the restaurant, you know, you're out front with the one child and your ex, the police, Tony, everything going on. Pretty much everybody else stayed back, I think, because we were trying to keep your other kids
from
running out. Well, the police
officer said, everybody who is with him, stay out here. Everybody who is with her, meaning me, go back into the restaurant. So everybody went back into the restaurant.
Yeah, not one person.
Not one person stayed out there with him.
Yeah. So we're back on this back patio of this restaurant. Like, what is going on? And your manager wasn't there. So I was talking to her on the phone. She's freaking out. You know, I'm going to that restaurant next door, trying to go through the kitchen to find like an escape plan to get us out of there. It was crazy. So
it's like a movie.
It literally is a movie. So finally, you guys worked out what was going to happen with the officers. And so, you know, your child got went with you.
Returned
with
to me, us. Yes.
So we had security that was going to be, you know, with you the next day, because when you filed, so the tour manager called him and said, hey, we need you now. Can you drop what you're doing? Come with us. Like, this incident has happened. You know, we need you to protect her and stay with us. So, you know, we had no plans because, again, this wasn't supposed to happen like this.
Yeah.
And so you didn't feel safe going back to the house with the kids. None of us did.
And I had two babies in diapers.
Yeah. with nothing. Everything's at the house.
Everything.
Other than just like the basic bare minimum stuff. So we get a hotel. The security guards come and they're like two guys with us, you know, like protecting us. And your brother was there, Ian Jay, tour manager, the nanny. We all check into this hotel. And at this point, it's late at night.
Yes.
And so, you know, we're traumatized. And you and I are sitting there, though, recounting everything, talking to the nanny, going through it all. Everyone kind of one by one goes to bed.
Yes.
Because they're tired. The kids fall asleep. Mm-hmm. You know, they had cartoons or something on. So you and I were sitting on the balcony of this hotel drinking wine. And I remember you taking your ring off, your wedding ring, mm-hmm. and you threw it off the balcony into the backyard of this house next door. And you're like, well, I guess I don't need this anymore.
And, oh my
gosh. But it was like you were almost having to like, you know, you were, I think, relieved in a way, but traumatized and and trying to, because you use humor to deal with things.
Right. Yes.
And so it was like, this is a funny thing. But I was like, what are you doing? Like, you could sell that. You could, you know, something. And you're like, whatever, I'm good.
Yeah, threw my wedding ring off the balcony.
Yeah. So who knows who lives in that yard if they ever found this like diamond wedding ring in their backyard. When they're like, what is this? So, hey, if you're listening and you found a wedding ring.
It's mine.
And
Yeah, but I don't want it back.
No. Just keep it. So, like, again, everyone's in bed. You and I were like, we're not ready to, we're so wound up.
So wound up.
We had run out of wine. And so I had my car that I'd driven cross country. Again, there, you know, parked outside. And so you're like, I just got to get out. I want to change of scenery. I'll come with you. Let's go get wine. So actually, no, I lied. I need to back up. Before we did that, you sent me. So
we went to the hotel and I said, can you go somewhere and get diapers, something for us to sleep in.
Sippy cups. Grape juice. Like
bottle.
Everything probably, for kids.
Because I probably only had what was in the diaper bag.
Yeah.
But both girls were in diapers because they were so close together. So, yeah. So I said, can you run to the store and get us some stuff that we need for the night?
And
basically.
Even like a DVD for the kids to watch a cartoon. You know, we had no clothes, no cell phone chargers, nothing.
Nothing.
And we didn't know how long we were going to be in this hotel, like what's happening. So I drive my car to, I think it's the CVS in West Hollywood. It's still there. Mm-hmm. And it's like midnight or 1 a.m. at this point. And so the only cart they had was one of those like little carts, like almost like a kiddie cart. Yeah. And so I'm going through the store, like everything that I can think of, filling up, you know, going off this list.
Yeah. Formula.
Yeah. Babies, everything.
Yeah.
And stuff that I don't even know, like what to do. I don't have kids. Right. I didn't know like what kind of formula to get or, you know, somehow I guess this will work.
So, and texting wasn't really a thing then.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I think our phones may have died because of all the texting going on during the restaurant incident that it just drained these batteries down.
Yes.
So anyway, so I'm there and I fill this cart up and there's like one checker in the store and it's piled high with all this stuff. And so I'm like pushing my kiddie cart through the checkout stand and people are getting in line behind me and they're like, oh, oh seriously? You know, like they're just buying like a bottle of wine or a bottle of water or something. Right. And I have this giant thing piled high. I'm like, sorry. And so I do remember though you had sent me, because I think it was it October yet?
Yeah, it was October.
It was cold in LA or chilly. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, we need sweat clothes. We need things to sleep in. And so the only thing they had were Halloween sweatshirts.
Yes.
In like 2XL. Mm-hmm. So I buy these Halloween sweatshirts. I'm like, well, this is all she's going to get. You know, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah.
So finally check out, drive back to the hotel, you know, distribute all the things. We got the kids settled, you know, plugged our cell phones in. Do you remember the magazine that I bought too?
Yes.
Wasn't it? Was like
it was
People
the
magazine?
Amish shooting.
Yeah. That had just happened.
Yes.
And the nanny was still in the room and she did not like your ex at
because
all.
Because we were like, I think we're safe. Nothing's going to happen. And she goes, remember the Amish. And then you went to CVS and that magazine was there.
The cover. And I bought it.
And you bought it.
I came back and I'm like, Katie, I just have one thing to say. And I held it up like, remember the Amish. And she got so mad. And like, that's when she stormed to her room, I think. So then that's when everyone had kind of left. We went through whatever wine I bought. Mm-hmm. And so you and I are like, well, let's go out. And you're like, I need to get out. I need to change the scenery. So you put the Halloween sweatshirt on. I think it was a hoodie.
I don't remember this at all.
And I'm like, well, I've got my car. We'll go to the grocery store. And so we walk out of the hotel and we had our two armed security guys out there. They were oblivious. We walked right past them. We
walked right by them.
They had no, I mean, you were wearing a like boo sweatshirt with a right. hoodie on, so mm-hmm. they probably weren't expecting you to sneak out.
But still.
Yeah, at least.
Like you have one job, is to make sure that nobody was going to come and try to hurt us, but we left and they didn't even notice us.
No, yeah. Not at all.
Yeah.
So we go to the grocery store, get more wine, more essentials that we just hadn't thought about earlier, mm-hmm. came back. And I think that's when you threw the ring over the thing.
Well, I wanted to sit on the balcony and drink wine and smoke cigarettes. And I'm sure I was just like shaking.
Yeah. You were buzzing, like tingling, like just the energy and the, you know, stress of it all.
Yeah. And then the next day we went to Sunset Marquee, right?
Well, so we thought that your ex had left town and we're like, okay, we can all breathe a sigh of relief. No, nothing to worry about. So we checked out of that hotel, went shopping at the Grove, if you remember.
Okay, do you remember that?
And then we got word that he didn't leave town and everyone just went into panic mode. We had the two armed security guards following us, you know, at the Grove, like we were the president or something.
Exactly.
You know, like ahead of us, behind us. So it was so like we weren't in a headspace to go out shopping. It wasn't like, let's go have fun and shop. We were
trying to entertain the kids and waste time.
Yeah. And basically have some like sense of like just being normal
right.
for a minute. So we find out he hadn't left. So everyone got just, you know, oh, we better be just extra careful. So that's when we went to the Sunset Marquee and they have like these villas, mm-hmm. you know, they're like little houses there, which are amazing. And so we all were like staying in this, you know,
like a 3-bedroom villa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like on the couches and the bedrooms mm-hmm. and just, we all were like hunkered together. Matt and Kaylin flew in from Nashville that day. And I remember you like everything hit. So because you were filing for divorce that next day, it was public.
And because, right. So that I do remember sitting on the couch at Sunset Marquee and it was before, it was when everybody still watched normal TV.
Oh, yeah.
So we had on like Entertainment Tonight or whatever. And it was like, tonight on Entertainment Tonight, country music star and Dancing with the Stars contestant Sarah Evans files for divorce, citing da 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 da.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, because I didn't know that divorces were public.
Yeah.
I was like, how do they know this? Like, how does anybody know what I put in my divorce filing? And everybody, you know, like my lawyers, my manager, my publicist, just didn't think about it.
Yeah. They never had that discussion with you.
No
one
told me.
I was around for a lot of that. I would have seen it if that would have happened.
Nobody discussed with me, you know, this is going to be public.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would have worded it much differently.
Yeah.
But
then like with the TV, you turned it on. I remember that we changed the station, like
every
almost
station.
Every single station. It was Access Hollywood, Entertainment Tonight, the local news in LA, everything. And we're like, oh.
And a big time celebrity friend of mine called me and said, what did you do? And I was like, what do you mean? I didn't do it. I don't know. All I did was file for divorce. And he was like, you know, this is going to be war.
Yeah.
And also I had to quit Dancing with the Stars because the next day we were going to start the group dance rehearsals. And because of the trauma that my children went through at the restaurant, I said, I'm quitting. Well, I was contractually bound to do that show. And so they agreed to let me out of the contract if I would give an interview and explain what was going on. So I remember having to go in hair and makeup and sit in some hotel room and do this interview with Tony D'Avalani. And without telling the detail, kind of like what we're trying to do now.
Yeah.
Explain that my kids were traumatized and I'm not leaving them for 5 seconds, mm-hmm. you know, and so I have to quit the show. I'm the only person that's ever had to do that on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. Most has been for like an injury or something.
Right.
You
yeah.
know?
But I probably would have won.
Oh, yeah. You totally would have won.
I probably would have won.
I remember too. So when everything was on the TV and when it hit you, Matt and Kaylin had just landed and I was going to go pick them up. And you, like, it all hit you and you literally fell on the ground and you had like a nervous breakdown.
I did.
It all like hit you. And I was like, oh my God, I've got to leave and go pick them up. But like, this is going, but you know, Jay, your brother, was there.
Yeah.
And the nanny was there. So there were other people, but I was just like, oh my gosh, like, is she going to be okay? Like, yeah. Is she going to make it through this? Like, this is so traumatic for her. So I went and picked up Matt and Kaylin, brought them back. Kaylin and I drove to your house in Beverly Hills, and we're like, well, you know, she's leaving town. She's going to do this interview. She's going to fly back.
Back to Nashville
and just hunker down with the kids. But all you'd been living in this house for a couple months at this point. So we got these giant boxes from like UPS or FedEx, whatever, went to your house and we just filled them up. I mean, there was no rhyme or reason. It was just everything and everything in a box. And we shipped these giant boxes back to Nashville.
Thank you both for doing that.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
it's like I said, it's all these things that were being done for me. And I just can't thank you enough. I mean, what would I have done? Like, there's no way I could have packed up that house.
Yeah, you can never go back there.
I remember Brenner or somebody was able to find a doctor to call in. What is the other thing? It's not Klonopin. Valium.
Oh, yeah.
They call in a Valium. I'd never taken anything like that before. And my brother took my phone, remember, because I was getting so many calls and text messages from my ex family-in-law, furious at me. And so he took my phone away, and Faith Hill called me, and he answered the phone, and she was like, I'm just checking on Sarah, and I want to make sure she's okay. And I remember him like freaking out that he talked on the phone to Faith Hill. And he was just so funny about it. And his wife, or his girlfriend at the time, was so mad because he was like, I talked to Faith Hill on
the
phone.
He was all giddy. Like, you're having the worst moment of your life and a pile on the floor. He's like, I talked to Faith
Hill. Yeah, he couldn't believe it. He just could not believe that he talked on the phone to Faith Hill. But yeah, he had taken my phone. He would not let me see it. And I took that Valium and I went to sleep and I slept for about, I don't know, a day. And then did the interview. RCA was kind enough to send a private, or fly us home on a private plane. And then we got home to Nashville and continued for, I guess, a month or so, maybe more, with the round-the-clock security. I don't even know how much that cost.
I have no idea.
I'm sure it was astronomical because it was like two guys round the clock.
Yeah. So back to the plane. So I had, you know, again, driven my car across country because Brenner was too cheap to pay for me to go out there. So you guys
just like reamed her about this over and over and over. I need to
give her grief.
Yeah, you do.
So you guys all get whisked away and we've all just been in this traumatic, like, trauma bond experience. One of the worst things of our lives, and we're so stressed. I'm like, well, they're all gone. Now I have to drive 3 days by myself cross country. So I'm like,
and okay. You're traumatized.
I was so traumatized. I was staying with a friend and she was giving me like Klonopin and all this stuff that I'd never taken either, just because I was so, I don't know how to describe it. It was awful. And so I'm like, well, I guess I'll drive back tomorrow. So I'm like, I'm going to go to Sprinkles Cupcakes in Beverly Hills because they had just come out, you know, and we got them for like the kids' birthdays.
Audrey's
and we thought
birthday.
We were so cool to have Sprinkles Cupcakes.
Yes.
So I drive to the Sprinkles in Beverly Hills and I park on the street, go get my box of four cupcakes. And I'm like, you know, piled up like the Beverly Hillbillies, ready to go back to Nashville. And I go to my car and I'd locked myself out of my car.
Craig Dunn.
Because I was so not in my, I probably was on whatever pill she gave me too, but I was so out of it. And I just remember I sat down, I think I called AAA. I sat down on the curb in Beverly Hills waiting and I just opened the box of cupcakes and I just started eating the cupcakes.
Did you eat all four of them?
I think I did. I ate all four cupcakes.
I would too.
I'm like, this is what my life has come to. I'm sitting on a curb in Beverly Hills after this traumatic experience eating cupcakes. Like, this is my life.
I rue the day I ever met Sarah Evans.
No, I was not thinking that at all. Rue the day. I met
someone else,
but I wouldn't be with you if it wasn't for that. So, so that was, and then I had to drive 3 days by myself and then it gets.
And how was that drive?
Awful. It was awful. So the worst part, well, I don't know how it gets worse, but I pull into Needles, California, which is just like leaving like civilization to get gas. and I'm pulling out, and it was like one of those mom and pop service stations, you know, where they change tires and stuff too. Mm-hmm. I'm driving out. The guy comes running, like the service guy. He's like, stop, stop, stop. And I'm, you know, traumatized. So I'm like, what does he guy? What does he want? And I like barely roll my window down. And he's like, I just need to tell you, your tires are bald. Like I can see the metal threading coming out. Like you're not going to get far on these tires. And I thought he was just, you know, trying to pull one over. I mean, I get, and they were, they, I mean, they
oh
were.
Oh my gosh.
And so he's like, you need new tires. And so luckily it was, they sold tires. And so I had to spend $800 on new tires, which at the time I was like mid 20s was a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And I had hit my point after all that. I called Brenner. I said, Brenner, I have to get new tires. It's $800 and you are paying for these tires.
Yes.
Like you didn't pay for me to fly out. You didn't pay for anything. You're buying these tires. And she said, okay, we'll buy your tires. So,
oh my gosh.
So I don't know if it was Brenner or you, someone ended up paying for those tires.
And I'm sure it was me.
Probably.
I mean,
and then I drove 3 days by myself cross country, just in this weird, like state of shock.
Yeah.
You know,
and so. Oh my God. You would have been stranded in that no man's land in California with your tires.
Or my tires could have blown.
Yeah.
You know, on the drive in the middle of the
desert. Thank God for that guy.
Yeah. Seriously.
Wow. See, I never knew that.
Yeah. So I made it home. No cupcakes.
And I made it through the divorce. And multiple lawsuits after that against me. Just craziness. I think we're figuring out the name of this podcast is, Constant Chaos.
That should be an episode of how does chaos follow you, or do you go after chaos subconsciously?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of both, because when I was 4 years old, I fell in a well and almost drowned. But when I was born, I was a breech baby. It was very dangerous for my mother. So it started at birth and it has followed me, or I've followed it ever since. That is crazy. And then the bad part is that people in my life are also, you know, thrown into this chaos. Like, I'm really sorry we didn't fly you out there.
That's okay.
Those are the kinds of things that...
Well, she was being a good manager. She was saving you money and she was insulating you from dealing with stuff that you didn't need to.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But now, all these years later, you are my manager. You've been a manager for, what did you say, 12 years?
12 years.
12 years, like full-time manager. The one who runs the company, basically, for me. And you do a hell of a job.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being on the podcast.
Yes, thank you. Hopefully
I'll
come back.
You're going
to
be on again.
Yeah, I'd love to come back.
Because we have so much more to tell.
Oh, there's so many more stories.
So many stories. But if there's one thing I'm grateful for from the negative is that we met you in the political world and we ended up here.
Yeah. It all works out.
It always does.
Yep.